We hear the word brand kicked around a lot. Personal brand, corporate brand, phrases like it hurts their brand or how to build a brand. But what is brand, and does each person have a brand? Why does brand matter, especially for a small business? And how do we know what's affecting our brand or what our brand says about who we are and what kind of work we do or how other people perceive us? And more, how do we change it if we want to? Today, we're going to find out the answers to those questions from a very cool woman I met who is approaching the idea of brand in a different way that I think you'll find helpful. Welcome to Green Connections Radio, where we help you live green, work green, and earn green. I'm John Michelson. We are talking innovation with top leaders and thinkers in energy and sustainability and those who are transforming our world. Okay, let's dig in here. I looked up the definition of a brand, and the one I found that I'd like to share with you is from businessdictionary.com. It says, a brand is, quote, unique design, sign, symbol, words, or a combination of these employed in creating an image that identifies a product and differentiates it from its competitors. Over time, this image becomes associated with a level of credibility, quality, and satisfaction in the consumer's mind. Close quote. I thought that was really interesting. So to explore this and how you might identify your personal brand and your company or organization's brand, I'd like you to meet Diane Diaz, who calls herself the brand teacher. Diane was marketing real estate in Florida, and when she was laid off, she reinvented herself and started teaching marketing and branding at Full Sail University in Florida, where she still teaches. Then a few years ago, she reinvented herself again, and the brand teacher was born. And I certainly relate to reinventing yourself. So I was so fascinated by Diane's approach that I took the brand assessment she works with myself, and it inspired me to look at the work I do and how to market it in a slightly different way. So I wanted to share that with you today. Diane joins us today by phone from Florida. So welcome to Green Connections Radio, Diane, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, Joan. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, thank you. So who cares? I mean, why do you think it's important to understand your brand?
Well, I'm glad that you gave a definition of brand, because I have a definition of brand, too, that's my favorite, that comes from Jeff Bezos, founder of Amazon, and he says that your brand is what other people say about you when you're not in the room. So that's why it's so important. And so in other words, other people are out there talking about you, your clients, your customers, your employees, your coworkers, whomever, and they're telling stories about your brand, making up things about your brand and feeling a certain way about your brand. And they're the ones actually that decide what your brand is. But what you can do as an individual, as a personal brand, is influence how they feel about you.
What I would describe that as is when someone is introducing me to somebody new, I always notice how they describe me, or how they describe the work that I do, or how they describe Green Connections Radio, what words they choose, and how they go about it. And I learn from that kind of what you're saying is, you know, what they say to you when you're not in the room.
Yes, because that's their perception of you, right?
So exactly.
They're using certain words to describe you because that's how they perceive you, because we all perceive ourselves a certain way, but that's not necessarily how our audience perceives us, right? So it's important to understand how you're coming across to your audience so that you can know, oh, well, I might need to shift this a little bit because I actually want to be seen this other way.
But why do we care how we're seen? I mean, how much of the brand, quote unquote, drives the bottom line?
Well, I believe it's important to understand how you're being seen, because if you're setting certain goals, so let's just look at corporate professionals, right? So if you're trying to move up in your industry, that means you need to be perceived a certain way. If you're trying to move into a leadership position, you want to be perceived as someone who is a leader. And leaders have certain behaviors and characteristics and traits and things, right? So if you're not perceived that way, you might not bring those opportunities to you. You might not be pegged as someone who can move into a role like that if you're not seen as having those certain types of qualities. So that's why it's important not only to understand how you're being perceived, but to care about how you're being perceived and how it aligns with the goals that you've set for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good. So if you want to get a job, or if you want to get new clients, or if you're a company and you want to get new customers, so for example, when Gap ran a stupid ad that insulted a lot of people in the population, that was devastating to their brand because that meant that they're not understanding who their customers are.
Absolutely. And you know, that's another thing about understanding what your brand is so that when, whether it's a corporate brand, a personal brand, so that when you do something, take some action, co-brand with someone, put out a certain ad, you know whether or not it's on brand, and if you know whether or not it's speaking to your audience, right? So obviously they didn't understand their audience because, or it was a misstep or a bad decision on someone's part, right? Because it was off-brand for them. So it's super important to understand not only how you want to come across, but how your audience perceives you, and understand who your audience is, for sure.
Right. Okay. So what I'm hearing you say and what I'm thinking is, in essence, brand is in the eye of the beholder to a degree. I mean, companies spend a lot of money on their corporate identity and their messaging to try to direct the company to see their company, to direct the consumer to see their company in a certain way. But the brand is really amorphous. I mean, it's up to the customer to choose to see them that way or not. I mean, so for example, Coca-Cola. I see it as junk food. Some people see it as comfort and joy, right?
Right.
Even though I know that Coca-Cola owns Honest Tea and some bottled water companies, to me, you know, and they do some great humanitarian work, to me, the brand is still junk food.
Right. And that's probably because you're not in their target audience, right? So it doesn't resonate with you because you aren't the customer. Mm-hmm. But for their customer, you know, the customer, they're trying to reach their ideal customer. So while you do receive messaging from Coca-Cola, you're not paying attention to it because you don't buy it, right? But if you look at the people who do buy Coca-Cola, and I mean, obviously Coca-Cola does tons of testing and consumer perception surveys and all sorts of things. So their target audience probably does have a connection to the brand in a deeper way that resonates more strongly with them because they are in that target audience.
Uh-huh. So if you're a company that wants to be perceived as sustainable or valuing women, for example, or valuing diversity, then you have to have your brand consistent with that. How would you, I mean, is that just about having sustainability initiatives and talking about them? Is it that simple, or is it more complicated than that?
It's much more complicated than that. I think for any way that a brand wants to be perceived, it's important to walk the walk and talk the talk, right? So it's not enough to just put out messaging that says, oh, these are our beliefs and our values. Now you have to back them up with actual action, right? So you have to live up to your brand promise and do things that support what it is that you said you believed in. So, you know, that's why you see companies like Starbucks with the recent incidents they had in their store, closing down all the stores. And say, I mean, they're really trying to take action to say this is counter to our beliefs and to our brand. And they're trying to walk the walk and talk the talk so that they live up to what their brand promises, which is very much about, you know, equality and, you know, treating everybody fairly and all of that. So that's why they're taking those actions.
So you have to prove it.
Oh, for sure. Yes. And especially in today's world, because everything is so transparent and consumers are super savvy and everybody's got video on their phone, right? So, you know, you have to be very transparent and you have to be very much on top of how your brand is acting all the time.
Exactly. And you have to do it consistently.
Absolutely. Consistency is one of the key things to creating a strong brand, because consistency is what builds trust with your audience. So when something happens that is inconsistent with what your brand promises, that is either an opportunity for it to break down and damage your brand, or it's an opportunity for you to get on top of it and show that, okay, yes, there was a mistake, but here's how we're handling it. That is on brand for us.
Oh, okay. That's good. Because life happens, right? I mean, and especially in these large organizations, you can't control every decision that every single human being makes, right?
Absolutely.
So you kind of alluded to this a minute ago, but you said that if you're working in a big company and you want to advance or you want to get a new job, that you have to worry about your personal brand. And this is something that you and I talked about offline as well. So you have this, it's funny. One of the things you said is it's scary, frustrating, and overwhelming to brand yourself to attract your dream job or clients. So you, in order to reduce some of that fear and frustration, you suggested this assessment tool, which I thought was fascinating when I heard you on another podcast, to give kudos to Katie Kremitzo's Biz Women Rock podcast. Thank you, Katie. She's fabulous. I've had Katie on my show, too.
Yeah, she is fabulous.
Yeah, I adore her. So your test is called Culture Talk, or the one you suggest, the assessment tool overall. And talk about the tool a little bit first yourself, and then we'll talk about mine, because I did it and thought, as I said in the introduction, thought it was pretty insightful. So talk about the tool overall first.
Sure. So Culture Talk is the company that created this particular archetype survey system. So just for some background information, archetypes were not developed by this company, Culture Talk. Archetypes have been around for a long time, and they were developed by Carl Jung, a Swiss psychologist. And then they were brought into sort of the modern world by Carol S. Pearson, who started connecting them to brands. And archetypes are present in everything. They're present in brands, they're present in stories, in movies, in television commercials. So, for instance, you might think about Star Wars, and there's a hero archetype. In fact, there's multiple archetypes in the story of Star Wars. But, you know, Luke Skywalker could be seen as the hero, right, in that story. So these ideas of archetypes are just storylines that run through everything all throughout time. And so that's why we connect with these ideas of archetypes so easily, is because they are based on common threads of storylines that we all know from the time we were children. And again, as I said, they appear in commercials, movies, everywhere. So Culture Talk developed this Culture Talk archetype survey system, and that's the one that I use. I'm certified through them. So in this archetype survey system, I use this individual survey with my clients to help develop and understand kind of the foundational aspects of who they are. So that when I'm working with an individual, whether it's an entrepreneur or professional, on her personal brand strategy, we have a starting point. So we know that she has a stronger archetype in this regard, and then these two supporting archetypes that sort of flavor it. And then from that, we validate it against behaviors in real life to see how does it actually play out in her life. And then we can use that information to develop a strategy around how she could position herself in person and online to show up in her company. So how does her personal brand show up in her company if she's an entrepreneur, or if she's trying to move up in a company that she doesn't own? How is she coming across on LinkedIn, or how is she coming across in interacting with other coworkers or even subordinates? So it has kind of a multitude of applications, but that's the Culture Talk survey system.
Mm-hmm. So I like that. So it's insightful in and of itself, but it's purpose driven. In other words, you do it with a purpose in mind of what you're trying to achieve. Are you trying to achieve attracting clients, or are you trying to attract a job, or are you trying to attract a promotion, or
I'll
speaking
be
engagements,
leader.
Whatever.
Exactly.
Okay. So mine was pretty interesting. When I did it, mine came up, as you know, as hero, sage, and ruler, with magician nearly tied with ruler. So you give just a little bit of background. You get a cluster of three as your top, and the point is that everybody has pieces of each one. But there are three top ones. And I've done many different assessments over my lifetime, as many people have. But this was the first one where something like hero was the top. And it threw me. I mean, as you know, when we talked about it, I was like, I don't get this, you know. But you said something really interesting, because I'm used to seeing magician or something like it be the first one, or sage or something like it be the first one, because I do so much in thought leadership and or connecting people to each other, communication, what have you. So, but you said something really interesting to me that when you saw it, which in retrospect is incredibly obvious, and I can't believe I missed it. But tell them what you said when I said, I don't understand why Hero is the first one and how it fits into what I'm doing.
Well, what my take on it, and again, I'm almost a casual observer from the outside, you know, just having met you, so to speak. But I have looked at your website, obviously, and read about you, and I do know that you're a journalist, and you do a lot of work in this, not only in the space of green, right, and how that you also do it in the space of how it connects to women in those industries. And so, in my mind, of course, you're the hero, because especially if you consider today's world, you know, the environment's in danger. Women are, you know, have been oppressed for so long, right? And there's this movement towards helping push women into different arenas that can help them all rise up together. And so you're, in some ways, leading that charge to do that. And so that is actually, you might call it the heroine if you want to, right? Because you really are. And I think your journalistic background supports that, because journalists, in the true sense, are supposed to get at the facts and uncover the story. And it's not uncommon that the story is helping to support someone who's been slighted or somehow not been treated fairly or something like that. And so all of those pieces and components of what you do and who you are, I think, really do support the hero as your number one archetype, in my mind.
Well, that was very helpful to me, really, because it's, journalism is many ways fighting for the underdog, you know, the family that didn't get the funding that they're due, or the product, the family that was hurt by some defective product, or the company that is talking, as you said a minute ago, they're not talking, walking the talk, you know, they're claiming X and doing Z, right? That was very helpful. So how do we know, these assessments are so interesting. I know you go really deep into this, and you work with people to see how it operationalizes in their lives, if you will. But how do we know if we got it right? How do we know if we have, like, if we take the assessment and we get some sense of what our brand is, and we develop a picture of what our, you know, it looks like our brand is, but how do we know if it's right? How do we know if it's working?
Well, there's no right or wrong to your brand. It's just a matter of what are the goals that you have, and then what are you doing to get there, and how can you leverage what it is that makes you unique and authentic to get there. So, for example, I've worked with several women who are sort of disenchanted with their current workplace, and because they feel that their current workplace no longer aligns with who they are from a value standpoint. And so they're looking to make a shift. So that means that in order to attract job opportunities or even clients that align with their values, they have to put out information that is clearly conveying what their values are. So that means you have to be very clear and consistent and credible with what your brand stands for. So when we understand the archetype for them, for this woman, we can craft her LinkedIn profile to reflect what her actual values are. And we can create it in a voice that's uniquely her, so that, you know, I always say brands are meant to both attract and repel. So if your brand is so clear that it does repel some people, that's great, because those are not your ideal jobs. Those are not your ideal clients. You want your brand to do that, because then more of the people and jobs that are right for you are going to come your way, because your brand will resonate deeply with them because you're a right fit. So it's really not about right and wrong. It's about what's best for your, to help you reach your goals.
Well, that's interesting because we live in a land where mass marketing and getting as many, you know, followers and likes and LinkedIn connections and, you know, selling as much of X is the name of the game, right? And what you're saying is that that's not the name of the game, that you want to have a better sense of who your tribe is and really focus on them. And if there are people who are repelled, if to use your word, by what you're doing, that's okay. That if there's people who are not your, because they're not your core customer. But that seems to fly in the face of how we define success in today's culture.
I think it's you make a good point, and I think it's because when we look at it on the macro level, it appears that every company is marketing to everyone all the time. But, you know, it might not be immediately obvious, but they're actually not doing that. And I like to use McDonald's as an example, since you brought up Coca-Cola. So McDonald's is a really great example, because it might appear that McDonald's markets literally to everyone, but they really don't. Now, that doesn't mean that everyone doesn't see their ads. We all see their ads. But I can guarantee you that they know specifically down to the age and down to the income level and down to the what any demographic or psychographic, they know who their audience is. So, for example, I used to do triathlons, and you cannot look in a triathlon magazine and find an ad for McDonald's because that is not their audience. But I can guarantee you they do market to maybe busy moms, moms with small children, you know, college students, right? So they know who their audience is. It's just that McDonald's is so huge that we all see their ads. But they're actually not targeting all of us. They're targeting the people who are in their core audience. So I think because there's so much content, everybody produces content. All of us do, all the time. And so there's all this content out there. So it does seem like everybody's targeting everyone, but in fact, at least for people and companies that understand who their audience is, they're actually really focused on reaching those people. And so the same applies to us as individuals. The more focused we can get on reaching the people that can give us the jobs we want or the people that can bring us the clients that we want, the more effective we're going to be and the less time it takes. And honestly, the more enjoyable and the easier it is.
No, that's a really good point. I'm thinking of, you know, for example, your McDonald's example, where they advertise so much on television and that reaches such a broad swath of the public that it seems like they're advertising to everybody when their ads are very targeted. I mean, one of my favorite ads for them that I've actually used in pieces about storytelling as a way of doing branding is the ads they do about their tuition program, where they have the young man come in with a letter that he's really nervous to open, and he has his boss open it with him announcing that he actually got into their scholarship program to get his tuition paid for. And, you know, it's 30 seconds or a minute, but it's an entire story.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It, you know, and then the tagline is America's best first job. Talk about targeting, right?
Yeah, for sure.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they definitely know what they're doing.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about how we can use this assessment and this understanding of our brand to drive success. You talked a little bit about attracting the more specifically your clients, et cetera. But you've talked about messaging and imagery and elevator pitch even. So how would the brand assessment, for example, that I did, how would that play into, or somebody did it, into developing an elevator pitch or messaging specifically, you know, speaking topics, whatever? How would that connect the dots for us?
Sure. So I can even just sort of walk you through how I would do this with my clients. So we first do this assessment, of course, and then we go through a process together when I work with my clients, which is very in-depth. So we, you know, I don't just do the assessment and go, here you go, bye, right? So I take them through a process of, because, you know, it's one thing to have the information, but it's a whole other thing to know what to do with it. So we go through what's called a validation process. And in that process, we'll validate these results in the assessment report against real stories from their life. So we'll look at, okay, if you're the hero, what stories could you tell me that demonstrate you being the hero, right? Where has this shown up for you? And we would go through and actually validate the top three archetypes in that way. And then after we do that, we'll go through a process of pulling out examples that show the shadow side. So archetypes have strengths and then they have shadows. So the strengths are the things that obviously are the strengths of each of the archetypes. The shadows of the archetypes are when you are so strong in that archetype, it might have some pitfalls to it. So, for example, one of my top archetypes is the sage, which is someone who seeks knowledge, shares knowledge. You know, they're often teachers. But the shadow, one of the shadow sides of that is that they can tend to be the know-it-all. Well, that doesn't always play well if you're trying to reach certain goals, to come across as the know-it-all. So you just, it's just about being aware of those things. So that could help you in a career situation by knowing, okay, well, if I'm the sage archetype and sometimes I have a tendency to be a know-it-all, let me just keep that in mind because I'm in a new situation where I don't want to ruffle any feathers and I need to play it right so that I can, you know, get connected to the certain person to move up in the company or whatever, right? So it's about having that awareness of how it shows up for you. And then we go through and develop what's called a word wall, where we pull out certain words from the report, from the stories you told me, words that resonate strongly because they're authentic to your archetype. So everybody's going to have a different collection of words, but what we can do with those words is use those to craft that elevator pitch so that you have sort of your own personal mission statement, if you will, or your personal tagline that you can share if you have to introduce yourself at a meeting or if you are, you know, literally on an elevator with someone and want to get, you know, you identify who the person is and you're like, oh, I have to meet this person, and you give them that quick pitch. So it gives you kind of this vernacular around who you are and an easy way to encapsulate that. And then from that, we can develop other things, like I'll often rewrite my clients' LinkedIn profiles so that they're more in line with what their true self is, how it reflects their archetypes, so it's more in line with their values. So that if anybody finds them on LinkedIn, it resonates more strongly with the people they want to connect with. So there is a multitude of ways that it can be used once we go through this process.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's very helpful. I like the word wall, but of course I'm a word person, so I enjoy that.
I am too.
Do you look at the verbiage that they've already used, or do you just kind of set that aside and start fresh?
No, I do. I do look at their current. So if I'm working, for example, on their LinkedIn profile, I do look at that. And then I also, of course, I have my own intake form. So I look at things they've shared with me and also information they've shared with me in discussions that we've had, so that I pull all of that in and use that as a starting point and then sort of twist it to fit better with conveying their true personality through this archetype.
Right. I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, so many people, myself included, I mean, we have our own websites now, right? So it's not just a LinkedIn profile. So I was trying to get at, do you start from, sometimes I like to not look at research that's been done on something or somebody else's way of doing things because I want to come up with it on my own first.
Sure.
And then
sure,
I might go back and sort of cross-reference. So when you're coming up with this word wall, do you, in preparation for it, do you look at their website to see what they've said, or do you just develop it on your own and then kind of notice where what they have up there dovetails with it afterwards? You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, yes, I do. And actually, the word wall is homework that they do, that my client would do. So that they, when we work together, I give them direction and instruction, and then they go off and do this homework, and then we come back and I work through it with them. But I don't, when I'm working through their word wall with them, they come up with the words. I don't go to any of their content and pull words from it and say, hey, how about this word? But what I do is I look back in the archetype assessment report and I might say, oh, well, I think that's a good word, but here's an even better word. that I feel fits you. How do you feel about that? Right. So they start it and then we work on it together after that point. So part of my work with them is letting them, you know, sort of digest this information and come up with stuff themselves. And then I add to it for them. But I don't, I understand what you're saying. I don't go to their website or I don't pull words from there because I want it to be more reflective of how does your archetype come across and how do you need to come across versus how are you actually coming across now,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. So does this work help you figure out what people think your core competency is?
It's more about how you convey your core competency. So it's a little bit about your core competency. So for example, since one of my archetypes is the sage, obviously teaching is a core competency for me, right? So it does speak to that, but it's about, for me at least, it feels like it's more about the delivery of it. So, you know, I can give information, you know, as a sage in a non-teaching way, or I can give it in a teaching way. So it's about you understanding the archetype and then understanding how that is delivered to the audience. So it's sort of a mixture of both, I would say. It, mm-hmm. it does touch on the core competencies, but it's really about how are you kind of messaging what it is that you do.
Mm-hmm. Kind of how you're showing up.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say that Sage is also like a consultant, you know, or a business strategist or somebody who's any kind of thought leadership, really.
Yes. Yeah, for
cool.
sure.
So before I ask you a couple questions about you, are we missing something here? I mean, is there something about identifying your brand and using this kind of assessment tool that that we're missing in this conversation that you think people should know?
Yeah, well, I would say that, first of all, the thing to understand is that we all have the capacity for all 12 archetypes. So sometimes people get hung up on, oh, you know, it's just the top three. In reality, we do have the capacity for all 12. It's just that depending on circumstances and, you know, where you are in your life, right, certain ones are going to come to the top. And certainly, you know, if you were to take this, if you took this 20 years ago and then take it now, right, it might be different. So just know that we all have the capacity for all 12. The other thing I want to say is that I like to just help people also understand what I feel are the three most important things about personal branding. So whether you're an entrepreneur or a professional moving up in corporate America or in a small business or wherever, with your personal brand, it's important to have clarity about who you are and how you need to come across to reach your goals. You want to have credibility. So you want to make sure that everything that you are creating and doing and saying in person and online builds your credibility to bring those opportunities to you. And then finally, you want to have consistency. So everywhere your brand shows up in person and online needs to be consistent in how it comes across. So clarity, credibility, and consistency are what I call my three C's of personal branding to make sure that you're actually using your personal brand to help you reach those goals.
Oh, that's great. And your assessment is really a way, or the assessment that you use from Culture Talk is really one way to get to the clarity part, right?
Absolutely. And oftentimes when my clients do this assessment, it's not really ever that they will say, oh, that was completely off the mark and ridiculous and stupid, right? They've never said that. I've always had people say, oh my gosh. Or they'll say, like you said, well, I'm not sure about that one. And then I'll say, well, consider this, this, and this. And then they'll say, oh, I never thought about it like that. You're right. So sometimes it's really just like holding up a mirror so that they can get that clarity, right? And see, they can see themselves. And mm-hmm. then they know, oh, okay, I get it now.
Mm-hmm. That's very helpful. So how did you get into this work in the first place?
Oh, that's a good question. So, well, as you mentioned in the intro, I started out as a marketing director in land development, and that went away because of the market collapse. But I started teaching after that, and of course, I just love teaching so much. And then I am surrounded by tons of entrepreneurs. Everybody I know has a business, and I started to, because I love branding so much, and I've was connected with a women's group, I did a little training for someone about personal branding for her team at her company, very small company. And then that just led to people starting to ask me, hey, could you talk to my group or could you help me with my personal brand? And then I just started a company to help people with their personal brands. And then I've actually been connected with Culture Talk for some time because I used to use a different version of their archetype assessment in the class that I teach at the university with my students so they could understand the company's brand. And then once they started developing this system, they reached out to me and we connected again. And they, you know, they offered this certification, explained it to me, and I said, oh my gosh, I'm so in because I can see using this with my clients, and my clients love it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love tools. I mean, I'm a self-improvement junkie and a self-awareness junkie. So, and when we talked, I think I told you about the purpose-linked organization one that I really like also. What was the first thing you did when you decided to go out on your own? I mean, I know that you were laid off, right? So, but when you then went into teaching, so, you know, you're doing that. But what was the first thing that you did when you said, you know, you had this aha moment that you just described?
Oh, the first thing I did was start doing speaking engagements, honestly. That was, yeah, I think I actually started, if I'm thinking about it now, I believe I actually started my official company, like actually incorporated it in order to, you know, because I thought, well, if I'm going to do the speaking engagement, I need to have a website. So I created a website. Well, I need to create a company. So then I, you know, went ahead and got the LLC and then I just started doing speaking engagements.
Mm-hmm.
And I love doing speaking engagements because I'm a teacher, right? So I just love to teach people things that can help them. And because I'm someone who's rebranded myself multiple times, I really think most people don't understand that the power that holds, right, in their personal brand, and that you can either use your personal brand in a way that can damage your opportunities, or you can take charge of it and take control of it and manage it so that it brings opportunities to you. But I don't think most people realize that.
Well, that's a good point. And I think also the truth is that we all reinvent our brands all the time. We just don't
Yes.
call it that. But I think also
Exactly.
it's kind of gotten a bad name because people feel like it's too commercial or it's egocentric or it's manipulative or it's slimy in some way. And the truth is, in kind of what you're saying, is you have a brand. You
Oh,
can
yeah.
either control it and shape it or not. That's up to you. But if you're on the planet, there's an image of you out there. And not everybody will have the same one, but it's a function of how you show up in the world. I mean, one of my pet peeves is reliability. I mean, life happens and things get in the way. But, you know, if you say you're going to do something and you don't do it, or don't do it at the time and you have to be hounded or whatever, that makes me crazy.
And that's your brand. If that's how you show up and you never deliver, that's your brand, right?
That's right. And it's also about, you know, when you know that you're going to not be able to meet the deadline, you know, you reach out and say, hey, XYZ happened. You know, I mean, I had a client who got quite sick earlier in the year and had to cancel a bunch of stuff. And, you know, it's like, can't control that, you know, and I don't, you know, he just kind of said, look, you know, I might be better in a month, but I might not be. So I think you need to go to plan B. You know, so I think that's a lot of it, too. Well, this is great. What would you suggest in closing to a woman who wants to use her education and her experience mid-career, not fresh out of college, but mid-career, who wants to use her education and experience to make a difference?
I would say, honestly, start with LinkedIn, number one, because LinkedIn is so robust and Google-friendly that it's going to get you found. So it's a way to get your personal brand out to the world to find those opportunities where you can make a difference. So it starts with understanding your personal brand and understanding, you know, what is that difference you want to make? What is it that you want to do? But once you identify that, put it out there to the world, because unless your brand sends out signals to the world about what that is that you want to do to make a difference, those opportunities won't find you. There are all these opportunities are out there waiting for you so you can make a difference, but you've got to get connected to them. And the way to do that is to put that messaging out there on LinkedIn and other platforms. But LinkedIn, I mentioned specifically because it is so Google friendly, so it's going to get you found. So I would say first define what your goals are, then define your personal brand, and then get on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think that's great. Do you accept invitations from everybody who invites you to connect on LinkedIn?
Not everybody, but from most people. I do look to see if I've never met the person, I look to see if they know someone I know, and if the person that we have in common is someone I trust, then I'll accept it. Because the idea with LinkedIn is that everybody's trying to build their connections. And as a person who's promoting people making connections to build a brand, I have to do the same thing, right? So I try to be smart about it, but I don't accept every single person, but most I do.
Okay, that's interesting, because I have thousands of connections on LinkedIn, but I also get invited to connect by people that I have no idea who they are and don't seem to have any connection to. And I don't know if that's a bot or if that's a listener or if that's, they don't seem to have sustainability. I mean, I can't find an intersection. And so I just sort of leave them in my invitations folder for now.
Yeah. And I think it's smart to have a personal policy of how you handle that. And that's your personal policy. And that's a good policy. There's no real right or wrong. You know, I have heard from some people, oh, I don't connect to anybody I don't know. And I think, well, how will you ever build your connections?
Exactly. Right.
If you don't connect to anybody, you already know the people you know. You need to know other people, right?
So, well, and it works the other way, too. I mean, I invite people to connect all the time on LinkedIn, but I always put a personal note that says, this is why I'm reaching out to you. You know, either we both cover sustainability and journalism, or we both, you know, spoke at the South by Southwest, or we both, you know you, or whatever it is, you know, and why I'm, or I want to interview them on my show because of what the work they're doing. So,
and that's good LinkedIn etiquette. And I think that's another thing that, you know, people who aren't super comfortable or savvy on social media might not necessarily understand the etiquette of that, but when I work with my clients, that's one of the things I do kind of a tutorial on that, because, you know, I'm trying to help them understand that they need to connect, but in order to do that, you need to know how. So I explain all that to them. It's much more successful if you include a personal note as to how you met them, how you saw them, where you saw them, somehow give them a clue why you reached out to them, right?
Well, that's also a reflection of your brand.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, it's how you move through the world, right? It's another form of professionalism.
Sure.
So thank you so much for joining us today, Diane. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Oh, I loved it. It was so much fun.
Oh, good, good, good. So thank you again on joining us today on Green Connections Radio, Diane Diaz of The Brand Teacher. You can find her online and on LinkedIn, obviously. So what did you hear Diane and I say that resonated with you? Do you want to take her assessment? Why or why not? What do you hope to learn from it? Tweet it to us at Joan Michelson or post it on our Facebook page and like the page while you're there. And ask to join our new private Facebook group or email it to us at info@greenconnectionsradio.com. You can find us on iTunes, iHeartRadio, where we come to you from today, TuneIn, Stitcher, and greenconnectionsradio.com, or wherever you like to listen to your favorite podcasts. I'm Joan Michelson. Thank you for joining us. See you next time.
Hi, my name is David Goldberg, president of Edge Studio, a voiceover company. We oversee professional narrators and voice actors for sales videos, training videos, telephone pre-recorded systems, commercials, web videos, and all applications requiring voiceover. And in fact, for over 20 years and in over 100 languages, we have been considered the most trusted and the friendliest leader in the voiceover industry. We're a green company with efforts towards sustainability at all of our studio locations. EdgeStudio.com. Sound people who are happy to help.